Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
A public opinion study shows 6 out of 10 Brazilians say a snap election could settle the country's political crisis. The study showed 62% of Brazilians want President Dilma Rousseff and Vice President Michel Temer to resign so a new election can be held. Rousseff is facing an impeachment process at a time when the Brazilian economy is in a recession. The country also has been dealing with a corruption crisis involving Petrobras, the state-operated oil company. But the Brazilian Congress would have to pass a constitutional amendment to have an early election. The next election is supposed to take place in 2018. The study found that only 25% of Brazilians want Rousseff to continue as president. 8% said a Temer government could fix the crisis. Researchers carried out the survey between April 14th and 18th. They spoke with 2,022 Brazilians in 142 areas. Researchers asked them about possible future leaders. Almost 40% expressed support for environmentalist Marina Silva. Another 32% said they liked Asio Neves as a possible leader. Neves was Rousseff's opponent in the presidential election of 2014. Opposition to Rousseff has increased in recent months. Some people accuse her of illegally covering up government budget deficits in 2014. She denies the accusations. Talk about Rousseff's possible impeachment has been a major subject in Brazilian media. The country is trying to recover from its worst recession in many years. In addition, Brazil has been attempting to stop the Zika virus and prepare for the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. The games open in less than 4 months. The lower house of Brazil's parliament supported the effort to impeach Rousseff. The Senate is expected to vote on the issue early next month. The opposition needs only a simple majority to suspend her and open a trial. The process could take as long as 6 months. Next, Ann Ball reports on the one-year anniversary of a deadly earthquake in Nepal.
1 year after a deadly earthquake struck Nepal, the Prime Minister announced the country is rebuilding some of the damaged heritage sites. They include temples, monuments, and a UNESCO heritage site. On April 25, 2015, a 7.8 magnitude earthquake killed 9,000 people and damaged hundreds of historic structures. Nepali officials have said fully rebuilding the country's architectural heritage and the 600,000 homes destroyed by the quake will take years. But this week, Prime Minister Kata Prasad Oli announced the government will start. Monday, the Prime Minister offered prayers at an ancient Buddhist temple, one of the hundreds of structures damaged by the quake. Memorial services for those who died were held Sunday. Protesters also demonstrated against the slow speed of the recovery efforts in the South Asian country. In a White House statement, National Security Council spokesperson Ned Prince expressed condolences for the lives lost in the quake. He also acknowledged that much of the hard work of rebuilding Nepal still lies ahead. "We are humbled by those who risked their lives to save others, including the 6 United States Marines who perished in Nepal while providing relief to Nepalis in need," he said. Other nations are also sending money to help the rebuilding efforts. Monday, the New York-based World Monuments Fund announced donations totaling $1 million for 5 historic sites. But while international donors have promised $4.1 billion towards Nepal's recovery, only $1.3 billion has reached the country. Critics blame the government for taking months to set up the National Reconstruction Authority. The slow movement to rebuild has left many people living in substandard temporary shelters. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies estimates that 4 million people are still in these temporary homes. The homeless have been promised about $2,000 in aid. However, only several hundred people have received the first $500 installment. Mike Bruce is a spokesman for the non-governmental group Plan International. He spoke to VOA via Skype from Nepal's capital of Kathmandu. Bruce said the Nepali government has not been slow to rebuild. It has simply faced challenges in the past year. Bruce added that homes and heritage sites were not the only things destroyed by the powerful quake. He said over 30,000 classrooms were damaged or destroyed. Plan International aims to rebuild 20 schools and repair 16,000 of those classrooms. Bruce said the classrooms will be both accessible to those injured in the quake and better able to withstand any future quakes. According to reports by VOA's Tibetan service, Tibetan villages along Nepal's border, which were also destroyed by the same quake, have yet to be rebuilt. Many of an estimated 100,000 displaced Tibetans remain without homes to return to. Last week, Tibet Radio, a Chinese official Tibetan language news service, said a senior official recently visited the displaced Tibetans. He told them that quake reconstruction is a top priority in 2016. It is not clear whether the construction will focus on rebuilding damaged homes or simply moving displaced Tibetans into new towns, as Beijing has done before. I'm Anne Ball.
United States officials have called on the Vietnamese government to release political prisoners and improve its treatment of civil rights activists. Christopher Jones Cruz has the story.
The United States government is urging Vietnam to release all political prisoners and end its poor treatment of civil society activists. U.S. officials made the appeals before President Barack Obama's first visit to Vietnam. He will travel there in May. A State Department official noted, "The promotion of human rights remains a crucial part of U.S. foreign policy and is a key aspect of our ongoing dialogue within the U.S.-Vietnam Comprehensive Partnership. On Monday, the two nations held their 20th in a series of meetings known as the Human Rights Dialogue. The talks took place in Washington, D.C. The State Department said the two sides talked about a number of human rights issues during the meeting. These included the importance of continued progress on legal reform efforts, the rule of law, freedom of expression and assembly, and religious freedom. They also talked about labor rights, disability rights, and cooperation between the two countries. The U.S. government told Vietnamese officials that it is concerned about Nguyen Van Dai, a human rights lawyer who was arrested in December 2015. He was detained as he was preparing to meet with representatives of the European Union. The EU officials were in Hanoi for talks with Vietnamese officials about human rights. In December, the State Department urged Vietnamese officials to make sure their actions were in agreement with international treaties. It also called on Vietnam to release unconditionally all prisoners of conscience. U.S. officials are also worried about blogger Nguyen Hu Vinh, also known as Anh Ba Sam. He was sentenced to 5 years in prison for what Vietnamese officials called abusing rights to freedom and democracy to infringe upon the interests of the state. The State Department noted several concerns about Vietnam in its 2015 country report for human rights practices. These problems included severe government restrictions of citizens' political rights, limits on citizens' civil liberties, and failing to protect citizens' rights to due process, including protection against arbitrary detention. Vietnamese newspapers and television stations face press and media restrictions. But U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the country's human rights policies have improved. He said Vietnam has promised to make sure its laws give the same protections as international human rights laws and treaties. During a recent visit to Hanoi, Blinken noted that Vietnam had approved the Convention Against Torture and the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. He also said that Vietnam was giving permission for independent trade unions to be created for the first time in modern history. And he noted that the Vietnamese government is taking steps to talk with religious and civil leaders as it writes a new law on religious freedom. The United States hopes the law will protect the rights of people of different faiths. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Now, Kathleen Strzok and Marcia James present this week's Personal Technology Report.
Application software for computers or mobile devices can do a lot of things for students of all ages. Apps can help students get better organized, study for tests, and prepare research papers. In other words, they can help the user do his or her very best work. Apps can help any users, even those who are not students, get more organized and improve their work. Whether or not you are a student, here are some apps worth considering.
Quizlet is a study aid app. It is filled with flashcards on many subjects to study. Use the cards that come with the app or create your own. Quizlet has links to subjects like arts and literature, languages and vocabulary, math and science, history and geography, standardized tests, professional and careers. The app has a mix of text, images, and audio recordings, including pronunciation of words in different languages. Quizlet has games to play and tests to take. Cards are available on the app even when you are not connected to the internet. Quizlet is available as a free app from Apple's iTunes Store. You can learn more at the Quizlet website.
Sometimes the most difficult part of writing a research paper is creating the bibliography. A bibliography lists all of the publications and other sources used in your research. Getting just the right citations to appear in the correct format can be difficult and take a lot of time. The EasyBib app can make creating a bibliography easier. The app can help organize the information and find citations for books, websites, and more. EasyBib users can simply scan the barcode on a book with a mobile phone camera to get the information they need. You can also search for documentation in the app if the book is unavailable at the time. The app offers over 7,000 different citation formats, including the commonly used Modern Language Association, or MLA, style. Users can change the way in which the information is organized and stored within the app. Users can email information from EasyBib to others or to send it to a home computer. You can sign up for an account at the EasyBib website. EasyBib is free, but users have to pay for its premium features.
An app called the Free Graphing Calculator is useful for students of mathematics or other subjects that require serious graphing. This free app gives the student more power to create lines and design images than many other calculator apps. The Free Graphing Calculator lets the user create up to 4 graphs at once and lets users resize the graphs for the best views. You can change measurements within the image easily using the app. The Mathematics and Science Guide within the app can explain some important math or science ideas.
The Todoist app can help even the most organized person with day-to-day activities. With this app, individuals can create a list of everything they need to do and set a target date or time for when each activity is to be completed. Users can use different colors to create groupings for school, home, and work. The app can provide reminders even when you are not connected to the internet. The app can also send reminders to a smartwatch. The app and most programs on Todoist are free, but some features are available at a cost. You can find out more from the Todoist website.
Evernote is an app designed to help organize notes. Users can add images, links, or more within the notes. Notes can be created from websites, and tags can be added to help search your notes later. Notes can be available using Evernote on both computers and mobile devices. The Evernote app is free. Users have to pay for additional features. You can learn more at the Evernote website.
Everyone wants to be more productive. The Pomodoro technique is one way to make the most out of your time. Pomodoro suggests that an individual works in time blocks and plans for short breaks during the workday. The Pomodoro app can help divide time into blocks for work and for breaks. The app on the computer helps keep track of time blocks for each activity. The app will say when it is time to take a break and when it is time to get back to work. Pomodoro can work with other apps, such as Evernote and Todoist, and help the user keep track of one's activities over long periods of time. The app is available for computers from the Pomodoro website. The app is free. Paid premium features are available. I'm Kathleen Strzok.
And I'm Marcia James.
At first look, the black and white photograph seems sweet and innocent. The image was taken in 1929 in Bremen, Germany. Nine neighborhood boys stand together. They are smiling as they look at the camera. But the photograph is the start of a dark story that is part of a new exhibit. The show, called Some Were Neighbors, is at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. Many years after that photograph was taken, and after the end of World War II, one of the men in that old photo put it in the mail. He sent it and a letter to another man in the photo, seen standing with a bicycle. The man with a bicycle was Jewish. During World War II, Nazis murdered his mother. Later, the man became a rabbi. In the letter, the other man explained that he had worked as a Nazi guard at Germany's Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. But he wrote, he never touched a Jew. The rabbi wrote back to the sender of the letter. He said, what I wanted to hear was how he felt about his job. Did he think that killing Jews was the proper thing to do? He never got an answer. The questions the rabbi asked the guard are central to the Some Were Neighbors exhibit. Millions of ordinary people saw the crimes of the Holocaust. They saw the crimes take place in city squares, in stores and schools, in the countryside, and other places. The Nazis found people all across Europe who were willing to take part in their crimes. Some were neighbors, explores what moves people to behave in certain ways in difficult situations. The exhibit challenges viewers to understand a dark period of history. It also examines the importance of social responsibility. Susanna Kozak runs the Visual World Foundation in Budapest, Hungary. The nonprofit organization works to support peace through video and media literacy. Last year, Kozak and other educators gathered at the U.S. Museum for an international conference on Holocaust education. The museum organized the conference with UNESCO. The conference brought together teams from 10 countries that have limited educational material on the Holocaust and other genocides. Those countries were Hungary, India, Lithuania, Mexico, Morocco, Namibia, South Korea, Rwanda, and Turkey. Each country's team left with a project plan. Kozak and the team from Hungary used the Some Were Neighbors exhibit to create a traveling student art project. The project centered on the Holocaust, but it aims to create a discussion about current tensions in their country, including a large new border fence that blocked migrants from entering Hungary. The anti-discrimination project is called Your Decision. Kozak's team worked with educators from 6 Hungarian schools. The students were from the very young to college age. The students explored ideas of tolerance, or accepting difference. Each group studied pieces of the Some Were Neighbors exhibit, such as a film clip of a Holocaust-era public shaming, or the Bremen Neighborhood Boys photo. Each group was asked to make a piece of art communicating the ideas they had studied. The students' works were displayed at an exhibit last week in Budapest at the Canadian Embassy. Teenagers from a Jewish school in Budapest made a three-dimensional copy of the Bremen Neighborhood Boys photograph. They separated the man who received the letter and another boy from the rest of the group. Susanna Kozak was born in 1974. She recalled not learning much about World War II history in school. "There is such a cultural silence," she said. Peter Fredlake directs the Holocaust Museum's teacher education program. He said the Some Were Neighbors exhibit tries to change people's understanding of what the Holocaust was. The Hungarian student art project, he said, pushes back against the Holocaust narrative Hungarians hear today, one that ignores personal responsibility and claims victimhood. Fredlake said that since the international conference, the other 9 countries' teams have also been exploring new ways for talking about genocide. The Hungarian Students' Art Project will be on display at the 6 participating schools starting in May. It will then move on to sites like the International Jewish Youth Camp in Hungary and to a gallery in Austria. Kozak said she hopes the art project will be seen in many places for many years because intolerance is a universal challenge.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.